Welcome to Community Alert. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams, keeping you informed on how to get ready and be prepared. Tuesdays at 11 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at 1 p.m. on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Hey neighbors, good morning. Welcome to another edition of Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and we're visiting today with Ron Coleman, who's a former fire marshal for the state of California. And Mike, you've got some stuff for us, haven't you?
Before we get to today's guest, a couple of announcements here. First, on somewhat of a sad note, Santa Barbara City Fire Captain Mike Moses has been diagnosed with cancer, and the association, local IAFF 525, is putting on a Texan Hold'em benefit poker tournament on January 30th. That'd be Sunday, January 30th, at the Carriage Museum, 129 Castillo Street in Santa Barbara. Includes barbecue, live music. Tournaments start promptly at 2 o'clock. Again, this is for Captain Mike Moses, Santa Barbara City Fire. Donations are $75 a player. Several prizes. First place, 50-inch plasma TV. Second place, 19-inch LCD TV. Third place, iPod. And then there'll be other gifts and raffles and what have you. And this is going to a noble cause for Captain Moses. For further information, get a hold of the local 525. They have a website here at www.iaff525.org. That's iaff525.org. Or give the city fire department a call. I'm sure they can help you out there. Their phone number, we'll get you the phone number here, and it's 965-5254, 965-5254. Also, Firehouse World is back this year. We're looking at February 28th through March 2nd, San Diego Convention Center in San Diego for fire rescue and EMS. I know for a lot of our listeners, they're not firefighters, but this is the equipment show of the equipment shows for the West Coast. Give them a call down there or give me a call. I have free passes to get you in on the floor. For Firehouse World, it's 800-827-8009. That's 827-8009 or firehouseworld.com. And again, I have free passes to get you in. If you're so interested, give us a call at the WRA, 964-7194. So, Chief Coleman, how are you this morning? Thank you for joining us.
I'm in reasonably good condition.
Well, for being as close as you are to Sacramento, that's something in itself, isn't it?
There's collateral damage going on all over the place, but that's okay.
Well, thank you for joining us today. We wanted to get in and discuss a little bit further about volunteer firefighters and volunteer fire service. Last time we spoke about this was about a year ago with Chief Vern Losch, also one of your close friends and on the CSFA Volunteer Committee. And so we thought we'd come back and address it again with today's financial situation. Going on. Volunteers are being looked at again in a new way, are they not?
Well, volunteers, but the concept of volunteerism has never really gone away. It's been in California obscured a lot by the growth and development in California that has resulted in volunteer departments basically retreating from the areas of the urbanized part of California. But I think that some of the current budget factors may place more emphasis on the use of volunteers in the future.
Now, when we talk about volunteers, we're talking about people that are in very different statuses, say a paid call where they get called to go on a call, but they're not paid as a career person, seasonal, such as Wildland, Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, a variety of different agencies that use seasonal. And then you have the true volunteer, the person that does it flat out for free. It's a pretty broad-based group of people.
Well, actually, the term volunteer implies no compensation. And when you say for free, one of the points I'd really like to make is that there is no such thing as a free lunch when it comes to fire departments.
No.
They all cost something, whether it's in the form of apparatus or fire stations or equipment to properly equip your firefighters. There is no such thing as a totally free fire department. However, a totally volunteer department is one in which there's no compensation for anybody in that organization for their time and energy and effort. Now, those other terms you used, like reserve, part-time, temporary, et cetera, those are all staffing decisions that are often made by departments that are going through transition from being totally volunteer to being combination.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, some of those combination departments eventually turn into full-time paid departments.
Well, when we look at the history of the California Fire Service, a lot of the big agencies we look at today started out actually as volunteer.
That's very true. As a matter of fact, I can tell you that the volunteer fire department, if you go back to trace the history of almost every fire department, at some point in time, even the biggest fire departments had a volunteer origin.
Mm-hmm. Well, even L.A. County for a long, long time. Santa Barbara, there's a variety of them out there. Where we're seeing some interesting changes that we should talk about a little bit is in San Diego and in Riverside. Those are two counties that are growing considerably, and the needs that are being put upon the fire service is obviously changing. And so we're seeing the volunteer fire service changing its dynamics and in some ways going away down there. Could you elaborate a little on that?
Well, I would hesitate using the word going away. I would say they're evolving.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and here's my point of view about that. And we could probably get into a real lengthy debate with this with different people. But the function of providing fire protection to a very large degree is a function of the demographics of a community. Visualize, if you can, for just a few moments, driving down Highway 101, and you go through a small community that the city limit sign on one side of the town and the city limit sign on the other side of the town are only two blocks apart. And there's maybe a filling station, a hardware store, a couple of minor businesses, and a few houses scattered around. Those little enclaves have as much need for fire protection as anybody else does. And as a result, they may often start off with a very, very low level of fire protection services. But those same intersections may someday turn into an urban area. And what happens with these departments, and I'll use Orange County as an example. I'll use myself as an example. When I went to work in the fire service in 1960, there were a large number of volunteer departments in Orange County, including the department that I eventually went on, which was Costa Mesa. We had a volunteer contingent that served there for a good 10 years after I began my career, and I overlapped with them. But at some point in time, there's a demand being placed on the firefighters in which volunteer staffing patterns do not work very well because they begin to abuse the concept of volunteerism. And I'll use another specific example. If you got a volunteer fire company that goes on one call a week, that's not much of an inconvenience. But if you got 9 calls a day and 7 of them were medical aides, after a while you really begin to tread a lot on the patience of the volunteers, and they've got to be considered something to become something else. And that's the transition that a lot of the counties are going through right now, is changing from being basically a essential level of service to being more sophisticated, being more complex, and having higher level of requirements.
Well, with that comes the training component. And
yes, it does.
You have to train for the services that you provide, and I think for the volunteer service anyway, that's become a daunting task. Well, it's a daunting task for the career service too. It's only so many hours in the day, and when your training requirements exceed your total number of hours of employment for the year, something's got to give.
Exactly.
So, well, along those lines, you've been very interactive with the California State Firefighters Association and the CSFA Volunteer Committee in trying to bring some solutions to the ongoing challenges facing the volunteer fire service. Do you see this thing as getting its legs and actually moving forward now?
Well, what I would say about the Volunteer Committee, and I'm grateful to have the opportunity to work with the CSFA on it, is what we're attempting to do is to put together some organizational components that provide support for a beginning volunteer department and provide some information from a transitioning volunteer fire department so that they can kind of take control of their own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate having a chance to work through CSFA on this because we're essentially going through some training components and some administrative components to make sure that a volunteer fire chief has all the tools in his tool chest to be able to do his job, or her job, as the case may be.
Well, I think that a lot of these volunteer chiefs are discovering that you've hit it on the head. It's a job. It's not something you just do on the weekends for a few hours and then go back home. It's a 40-hour a week at the bare minimum job, and it's keeping people busy. One of the challenges that I think the volunteers also have nowadays is the area of recruitment retention. And I know that CSFA's come up with an $800,000 SAFER grant, and that's over a period of 4 years to help meet those challenges and try to get more people into the volunteer fire service.
Right.
How well is that actually working out in the reality of putting people on the street?
Well, it's too soon to determine how well it's going to work out, because we're just in the formative stages of executing the grant right now. Greg Redden is a gentleman who is managing this particular project. He's been working very closely with our committee. And, for example, we're going to be holding a leadership summit coming up in March in which we're going to invite volunteer fire officers to come so we can show them what's available in the toolbox and what kinds of things that they can start using to help recruit and retain their firefighters and so forth. I would submit that we probably won't know the outcome of the project itself for probably about a year.
Okay.
It takes that long to see any degree of change. And I think it's real important for us to recognize that if we don't keep track of that change, we probably won't get any more grant money. I think that the name of the game here is to be cost effective.
Exactly.
And do everything we possibly can to demonstrate that we actually were able to make a difference.
Well, we're visiting today with former State Fire Marshal Ronnie Coleman, Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan working the board for us. This is Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster on KZSB, AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and on the internet at newspress.com. We'll be back after these messages.
Welcome back to Community Alert, folks. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and we're visiting today with Ron Coleman, who is past fire...
Marshal.
Pardon?
Past fire marshal.
Fire marshal, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Okay. Good, Mike.
We're live today, Ted.
You're good.
We're live. Well, Chief, getting back to our conversation about volunteers, I know there's always been and there will always be the issue of where do volunteers belong versus where they don't. And within the fire service, this gets awfully controversial. In your view, where should volunteer fire services be looked at as an asset, and where should they be looked at as an accessory, if you will?
Well, I'll use a kind of a one of these planning models where you compare two different variables against one another. For example, time and distance, when you're talking about response times, are two different variables. And if you have something that's really close to your firehouse, you should be able to get there fairly fast type of scenario.
Right.
The way I look at this is that what we really are talking about in terms of level of service is population and frequency of events. And the lower left-hand side of this quadrant, where you have low population and low frequency, can you visualize the four little squares by doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have a population, low frequency. You usually don't have much money, okay? You don't have very much of an income to work. Now, if you go to the other right-hand side of that lower axis, which talks about frequency, as frequency goes up, it starts placing a demand on the organization, all right? So if the upper right-hand quadrant, the one in the upper right-hand corner, would be high frequency and high density, obviously you're just about going to have full-time paid forces to be able to deal with that kind of demand. Does my model make sense visually in your mind anyway?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so here's what we're really saying, is that in those parts of the country where there's low density, low frequency, then there's usually a lack of revenue to pay for professional forces. And what I mean by that, I mean talking about paid forces. Not that the word professionalism applies to almost anybody that decides to take on a level of sophistication, but I'm talking about the difference between being a totally volunteer or being a totally paid force. What that really boils down to, as population starts to increase and as density starts to increase, it starts placing a higher and higher demand on the time the volunteers can serve and the amount of time they've got to be prepared to serve. Now, see if I can explain what that second component is. If a fire department only exists for one thing, and that's to go put trash fires out, they don't need to know much. But if they're going to fight an interior structure fire, or they're going to fight a flammable liquid fire on a highway, they got to have a certain level of training to do that. We don't equip people to become suicide pilots out there in the field. So this little matrix I just laid out for you is when you've got low demand and low frequency, you still have some minimum things you've got to do to be ready. We call that training and preparation. Now, to answer your question, and I'm going to use some numbers that somebody will probably shoot me for, but they're my numbers. It's very difficult to visualize a community that's got 3,000 or 4,000 people in it having enough money to pay for a full-time fire department. It is incredibly difficult to have a community that's got 100,000 people in it to be able to use any form of volunteer forces because they're just not viable.
No.
And what we're talking about is a sliding scale that goes up through different stages of evolution. It is absolutely essential that communities that are out there, that are remote, that are rural, that have low density, low frequency, they still have property values at risk, they still have population at risk, and that's where the volunteer fire department fits in the model the best.
And those density areas are changing, and particularly in the Riverside and the San Diego area. Consequently, there are big changes coming. So as we see growth, even in Santa Barbara, ultimately the San Marcos Pass is going to develop in some form, and the dynamics up there are also going to change. Where it doesn't look like it's changing very quickly is in Northern California. When you start looking at Humboldt and Trinity and Shasta and Del Norte and Glen and Lake Counties, those are rural areas. And, in fact, Trinity, they consider that a frontier county.
Yeah, let me be true, but you got to watch out. There's a term that I've coined called equity immigrants, and here's what an equity immigrant is. Somebody who's lived in an urbanized area of California, bought a house in about 1970 or 1980, retired in about 1995, took all their equity out of that house and went as far away from that urban area as they possibly could, bought a big home, settled on the top of a mountain, and then wondered who's going to provide fire protection for them.
Well, and you see that in these rural counties where, and more and more, because they're retired cops, they're firemen, they're school teachers, public employees, executives, and what have you, that want to get out of the metropolitan environment, and can't fault them for that. But they want services. They want the cops there in 3 minutes. They want the sewer. They want the daily trash pickup. Well, that doesn't exist in Northern California.
Well, as a matter of fact, I can actually point, and I'm not going to name counties, but I have been in counties where the land use planning policies have totally ignored the requirement for fire protection. They've authorized what I call gated communities to be built in some of these areas, which have very high demands on the volunteers, and yet there was no consideration of helping the volunteer fire service with funding for fire stations or fire apparatus. And what I'm talking about is taking an area where essentially it's rural, and taking 200 to 300 acres and plopping down a whole bunch of houses, building a wall around them and calling it a senior citizens complex, and then the local fire chief, usually who is a volunteer, has to cope with that. I don't think it's fair myself, and I think that that's partially a problem with county levels of government not paying attention to the nexus between demand and density that impacts the volunteer fire service.
Well, you know, I see that condition also being accelerated where we've had some of the major campaign fires because people have rebuilt. And what they've rebuilt is substantially more improved and bigger and better and has a much better footprint than what actually burned down. Nobody's come in behind that and said, okay, well, now you've got a 2,700-square-foot, two-story house, da-da-da-da-da, and it may comply with the current fire codes, but the volunteer fire department up the street still running a 1958 Seagrave.
That's exactly true.
So, We're getting a high sign here from Richard for our next break. Please excuse us here. I want to remind folks the Texas Hold'em, Sunday, January 30th, 2011, Carriage Museum, 129 Castillo Street, Santa Barbara. And this is a benefit for Santa Barbara City Captain Mike Moses. For information, get a hold of their association at IAFF525.org. That's IAFF525.org, or call the City Fire Department. I'm sure they'll help you out. 965-5254. That's 965-5254. Donation $75 per player, and it starts promptly at 2 o'clock. It's Community Alert, not if but when. Positive preparation for disaster with Ted Adams and Mike Williams. On KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio and newspress.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hey folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams, my co-host is Mike Williams, and we're working today, or talking today, with Ron Coleman, who's a former state fire marshal for the state of California. And Mike, you got some stuff.
Well, I'd like to remind our listeners, and also for the podcast, the definitive publication on what we're talking about today is The Future of Volunteer Fire and Rescue Services, Taming the Dragons of Change. It's actually out of the Oklahoma State University, and it was copyrighted in 1996. And this is a good publication, whether you're a volunteer, you're a combination, or you're the city of Los Angeles. This talks about all the different variations of the volunteer fire service and the EMS, because back east, EMS is separated. They operate as two separate entities. So it also talks about the merging and the fusing of an EMS organization with a volunteer fire department, bringing those two together.
Interesting.
So it's a comprehensive book. Again, that's The Future of the Volunteer Fire Service, Fire and Rescue Services, Taming the Dragons of Change. And you can get that through Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble and what have you. So getting back to Chief Coleman. Chief, a little bit about the training, because that's where you and I've had our passion and we've really been focusing on, and that's really where some of the biggest hurdles are.
Exactly. One of the comments that we were talking about earlier has to do with the difference between providing a basic level of service and then becoming increasingly more sophisticated with it. I think it's really important for everyone to recognize that being a volunteer firefighter does not mean that they are just allowed to go about their business willy-nilly, because firefighting is a dangerous occupation. It has been from the early days of the volunteers, clear back in the 1800s, and is equally dangerous today. So there are requirements that have been discussed and have been established that set sort of like minimum criterion for people to be allowed to climb on the back end or climb on the jump seat of a piece of fire apparatus. And that's one of the reasons why there's no such thing as a free volunteer fire department. This often demands time. It also sometimes demands that you send people away to classes. It demands that you bring instructors locally. I know that your Fire Service Training Institute has located instructors and taken them into rural counties so that people have access. It's really important that people draw a distinction between being a volunteer and actually being competent to exercise the responsibilities of an incident commander. Fire doesn't know the difference. Fire hasn't got a clue that the person who's approaching them or approaching the fire does or does not know what to do. So therefore, you've got to make sure that all volunteers have received a minimum amount of exposure to fire and life safety techniques and processes and policies that keep them from becoming a casualty.
Well, you know, it's how to pay for it. On this show, we talk about a lot of it's our business manager, Bill Booth. He drummed it into our heads. Who's going to pay? The first question you got to ask, no matter how slick you may think your idea is who's going to pay? And that's really become the pivotal challenge, not just for the volunteer fire service, but for the career fire service, too.
Oh, totally.
Is who's going to pay for all this training? I just got back from Vermont, and I interviewed fire chiefs back there, primarily in the southeastern section. I got to get organized here today. Mm-hmm. Southwestern section of the state. And they put a lot of the blame on training on NFPA, which is sort of a national organization that sets a lot of these standards. And it, they think that it's getting out of control. What's your view on that?
Well, I don't want to pick a fight with the NFPA.
No, I don't either.
Standards. So let's just talk about what that process is all about. The National Fire Protection Association has been publishing documents that help guide the fire service on what it should be doing for over 100 years, clear back into the 1800s. And the whole concept of raising the level of competency of firefighters has undergone quite a transition, especially over about the last 50 years. So whenever the NFPA puts together its consensus developing process to develop a standard, they ask people to participate in that who supposedly represent the same people who are going to use those standards. Well, it makes a lot of sense to me, and I hope this makes sense to your listeners, that it's really hard to get together a whole group of volunteers to go write a standard for the volunteer fire service.
Oh, yeah.
Therefore, a significant amount of the work that's been done in the past has been based upon establishing a body of knowledge for those who are following and pursuing a fire service career. Now, there is one organization that's done an excellent job of representing the interest in this area. It's called the Volunteer Combination Officers Section of the IAFC, International Association of Fire Chiefs. They do spend a lot of time working on this particular thing, and they have published documents which are being circulated as we speak. But frankly, the thing that really is important to remember is that the minimum amount of training that's required to go out into the field may or may not be embodied in an NFPA standard. It may be embodied in the needs of your community. For example, and I can point out this particular case, that there are parts of the world that their only fire risk is a single-family dwelling. So why do they need to be trained on high-rise? Why do they need to be trained on airport fire control? Why do they need to be trained on other things? So I tend to refer to the arena for the volunteer fire service as consisting of some best management practices to make sure that firefighters don't go in the field inadequately prepared to do their job. That's what a volunteer fire chief has to concern themselves with.
Well, there's another organization very active in support of all this, and that's the National Volunteer Fire Council. And
that is true.
They, in California, CSFA is the representative to the national level. And you're right, trying to get a bunch of volunteers together on the weekend to come to some sort of consensus as to what they need or don't need or want or don't want or how to pay for things is a daunting task. We're having enough challenges just in California.
I often draw this comparison. Not a lot of people agree with me, but which I understand, that if you were going to become an airline pilot, an airplane pilot, you don't go from training wheels to flying a 747. You have to go through different stages of that process. And what I'm talking about when it comes to minimums for the fire service and the volunteer fire service is talking about what those minimums need to be to keep a person from hurting themselves on a routine emergency. That's what I'm really talking about.
Well, one of the leaders on that has been Sonoma County. I think they've really picked it up and really run with it. San Luis Obispo County also has a long history of trying to get a handle on this stuff also. But I think what Chief McIntyre, he's the fire marshal in Sonoma County, has come up with the Volunteer Firefighter Instructor Guide is a profound leap forward.
Well, that document that he's working on is based upon an old document we used to have in state fire training that was referred to as the volunteer task list. And what Chief McIntyre and Chief Randy Collins have done up there in Sonoma County is that they've started to fine-tune that thing, make sure that all of the basics are being considered early on. It's still in the, I should point out, and I'm sure you're aware of this, it's still in the formative stages, so we're looking to hear from other volunteer fire departments as to what they think belongs in it.
Well, I know we'll be going over it again here shortly in Sacramento. We're up to our next break. Excuse our interruption, Chief. Ted Adams, Mike Williams, Richard Dugan at the controls for us. This is Community Alert, visiting today with former State Fire Marshal Ronnie Coleman. Not if, but when. Positive preparation for disaster at KZSB AM 1290, your Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and on the internet at newspress.com. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Hey folks, welcome back to Community Alert. I'm Ted Adams. My co-host is Mike Williams, and today we're visiting with Ron Coleman, who's a former state fire marshal over California, and talking about a lot of volunteer fire department stuff. Mike.
Well, let's pick it up. Chief, you're working and are the head of the volunteer fire committee with CSFA, and you're currently working on the California State Firefighters Strategic Committee, strategic plan. And let's talk about that a little bit, why this is so important and why the time is now.
Okay, well, what we are attempting to do right now is to put some stepping stones into the path for the volunteer committee by developing and then executing a strategic planning process. We're not representing the entire CSFA in this project. We're only representing the volunteer committee. And what this exercise consists of is actually examining the current state of affairs and defining what's working and what's not working, and then setting out some strategic initiatives that, if we can accomplish them, should start supporting the volunteer fire service in a more improved manner. The plan was started under Vern Losch. I served as a facilitator when Vern was the chair. Recently, I've taken over as the chairman of the committee, and I'm continuing with that process. What we're attempting to do is to give some stepping stones to the volunteer fire service to get engaged with. For example, we're starting up with a seatbelt initiative, which is going to be going out to the fire service. I've got another initiative coming along behind that called Out of Air, which deals with smoke poisoning that we want to make sure all the volunteer departments are aware of. The whole theme behind the strategic plan is, there's an old saying, and it's pretty simple and straightforward, and that is, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. So what we're trying to do is to build a road that lets the volunteer fire service pick and choose what needs to be done to improve their lot in life, and that's exactly what the plan is all about.
Well, as you know, I'm a big believer in having strategic plans, and this is actually the outgrowth of the first strategic plan, which we actually got some of that implemented and took place, which then laid the foundation to really jump ahead and create what I think is a very mature document and program. It's going to last us a good 5 years, easy.
Thank you. I hope it does.
And, you know, the cooperation that we're seeing on this is statewide, from San Diego all the way up to Shasta County and on both sides. Even Tulare County is involved in this project. And it's interesting because the needs of all these organizations is almost identical. The complaints, the problems, the financial issues, hiring, retention, recruitment, all those kinds of things. But the solutions are not universally the same. And that's what I'm kind of finding is the intriguing and the challenging part of this.
Well, obviously, you know, there's an old saying about that, too, and that is that if you've only got a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And what we're talking about here is developing a toolbox of initiatives that match up with local communities. I would, I'll try to use some examples without naming names, but I've been in different counties that have done an outstanding job of this planning process themselves, and they don't need that much help. They need support.
Right.
Chief Tom Forrester from Skywalker and his group up in, I believe it's Plumas, has been doing an outstanding job. Other counties are looking around for assistance. They want to know, what should we do first, what should we do second, how should we approach this problem, et cetera. And that's what this planning process is intended to do, is to help with that.
Well, certainly we're giving them something that folks can look at and incorporate within their own localized plan, because you're right, every community is different with what they need. And so to have an absolute where you got to come down and you got to check all these little boxes off before you are one is not necessarily going to work. and it also turns people off. And so we've got to have a package that's fluid and it's dynamic and that it can fit in San Diego as well as it can fit up here in Santa Barbara or San Jose or wherever. So,
well, we've got 58 counties in the state of California, and every one of these counties has a different demographic. It has a different, for lack of a better term, risk assessment concerns, and that's what this is all about.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds with the state financial issues. It's too early to tell what the budget's going to be because it's only just been opened up and proposed, and it's certainly going to get hashed out over the next months to come. But the Volunteer Fire Service certainly is going to have to start looking at alternative ways of funding itself. What do you see as some of the options that they have?
Well, let me rephrase what I think I just heard you say. You said the Volunteer Fire Service. I think the communities are where this all has to start. I've read the budget message myself. In fact, I spent quite a few hours going over yesterday the impact on CAL FIRE that is being proposed in terms of staffing reductions and a whole bunch of other issues. And these are going to start impacting communities. From my perspective, what I think really is essential right now for the Volunteer Fire Service is they need to be talking to their mayors, their county supervisors. They need to be talking to their chambers of commerce. They need to be talking to their homeowners associations. Right now is a time to start developing a meaningful dialogue with the authority having jurisdiction. There's going to be a lot of misinformation put out as a result of these budget reductions. I'll guarantee it. I'll almost not only guarantee it, I would almost make bets on how fast some rumors get perpetuated. So what's important right now is for the Volunteer Fire Service to be thinking about alternative funding mechanisms, alternative organizational structures, what kinds of partnerships do they want to get engaged with, who do they want to work with to improve their level of service, and things of that nature. I don't have a really, really ready-made list of what everybody should go out and do today. But it all starts with the fact that the Volunteer Fire Service must look at itself now as an instrument of the community they're trying to protect and start communicating with the people who represent those decision processes.
Well, certainly the communities need to get involved, and I think people take the fire departments, whether they're career, volunteer, or what have you, for granted because for the most part, you're not using them for anything. Then all of a sudden, you have that chimney fire, that stove fire, or the kids need help or what have you, and then suddenly you're making that phone call, and the fire service that you're calling may not be quite what you thought it was. And the communities need to understand and quantify what services do they want, what do they not want. And then, of course, the question comes up of how you're going to pay for it.
Well, I think one of the things that we need to look at is better communication between the communities and the fire department, and that's going both ways. I mean, what does the community expect from the fire department? What does the fire department expect from the community? And I think a lot of times that the communities don't have any idea how the fire departments work, volunteer or municipal. But I think that there needs to be better communication go both ways.
Well, that is what I was alluding to earlier. The fact is that some of these funding mechanisms that could be available are directly linked to governance. We've got a significant, interesting phenomenon in California in that there's 100 different ways that a fire department can come into existence according to California state law. Mm-hmm. And in order for there to be any sense whatsoever about levels of service, there needs to be some dialogue about expectations.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor ought to know something about the Volunteer Fire Department other than the fact that there's a bingo game on Friday night and an annual chili cook-off.
Well, absolutely. And I think that goes back to your statement about all the different environments that these fire departments exist in, and which means that there's a lot of different kinds of things that those fire departments will do and are expected to do, and that needs to be communicated with their agency folks that are outside of the firefighting.
Well,
this is one of the reasons we're doing our leadership summit, and during our leadership summit, we're going to be discussing some techniques to discuss that.
Well, you know, it gets into the round peg and the square hole scenario, too, where the community has an expectation of whatever it is, and then the fire service is trying to say, well, no, but you need this, and you need that, and you need this, and it creates clash, where the ultimate decision maker probably needs to be the community itself, because they're the ones that are, not only are they the ones paying for it, but they're also the ones that are expecting the service.
Well, I think that's something that we're trying to do with this group that we're talking about.
Yeah, the group that we're forming over in Buellton is exactly that, is to try to get a little bit better handle on what is the expectation of the community.
And
we think we know, but do we really? Can we prove it?
The capabilities of the departments, and I think that a lot of times the communities don't understand that there are some restrictions on what the departments can do, especially now when there are some problems with the economy. So I think there has to be an ongoing dialogue. I think it really needs to be something that that goes on all the time.
Well, one of the documents that we're going to be exploring when we do our leadership summit is what we call a description of basic levels of service. And we're going to talk about the difference between offensive and defensive operations and the difference between a community that has an expectation in a rural environment as opposed to an urban environment. And
right.
we have a need to continue to develop a more sophisticated vocabulary between the fire service and the people that they're serving. I can't believe the number of times I've gone into communities working with the Volunteer Fire Service and had people tell me, well, gee, I thought our guys were all paid. I go, excuse me, but that fire station up the road has been there since 1922, and they've never had a funding source.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you ever get that impression? Well, we got that impression because we see them driving these shiny red trucks down the street. And I said, guys, you need to understand that those fire trucks were paid for by bingo games and chili cook-offs. They didn't come out of your tax because you guys aren't paying any taxes.
Yeah,
it's amazing the lack of understanding of that phenomena all by itself.
Absolutely, and there are so many of those issues that could be taken care of by good communication between the agencies. And
that's public. Not unique to the Volunteer Fire Service.
No, it isn't, but that's what we're talking about here. So.
Well, we're getting a high sign from the ever-diligent Richard Dugan at the controls. Ted Adams, Mike Williams visiting today with former State Fire Marshal Ronnie Coleman on Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster. On KZSB AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and on the Internet, live at newspress.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
Folks, welcome to our last segment. I'm Ted Adams, my co-host Mike Williams, and we're visiting today with Ron Coleman, who's a former state fire marshal here at Community Alert. Thanks for tuning in. And Mike, what you got?
Well, Chief, we've got just a couple minutes here. Any closing thoughts that you'd like to share with the audience?
You know, I think the main theme that I wanted to bring to this discussion is the fact that volunteers are still a fundamental basic level of service for many rural communities, and that they have just as much of a need to be planned for and reckoned with as anything else. I also need to reinforce the fact that the working relationship between the fully paid fire forces and volunteer fire forces is something that's really important to understand, especially during the transition time. And the name of the game is to be better prepared for the future.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much, Chief, for taking time out of your busy schedule to visit with us, and I'll see you in just a couple weeks.
I certainly hope so.
Okay, thank you very much, sir. We'd like to thank our primary sponsors, the California State Fire Safe Council, as well as California State Firefighters Association and the Fire Services Training Institute for helping make today's show possible.
Absolutely.
Also want to get one more last word out here for Santa Barbara City Fire Captain Mike Moses. Texas Hold'em, scheduled for Sunday, January 30th at the Carriage Museum. Further information at IAFF525.org. That's IAFF525.org. Or give the phone number or call 965 9655254. That's 9655254. Donations, $75 a player. And, of course, Firehouse World coming up in February. For further information, firehouseworld.com, or give them a call at 800-527-8009. That's 800-827-8009. The dates on that, February 28th through March 2nd, San Diego Convention Center, obviously in San Diego. And I also have free passes for people. If you give me a call, I'll get those over to you. You have to register online. So, Ted, very informative conversation today. This
good
volunteer stuff is good. There's so many different aspects to it. As communities grow and things start to transform, obviously some volunteer departments are going to evolve into something different.
Well, I'm all over the volunteer idea, and when it comes to firefighting, I think it's something that's going to be coming of age. I think that every small community is going to be looking more and more at taking some responsibility for doing their fire work there.
Well,
whether
you have
it to. Whether it has to be just working with evacuation situations or actual firefighting, and I think there's a lot there.
All volunteer organizations that are providing public safety type of services need your help. So with that, we're going to close out. Ted Adams, Mike Williams had a great conversation today with former State Fire Marshal Ronnie Coleman. On Community Alert, Not If But When, Positive Preparation for Disaster, KZSB AM 1290, Santa Barbara News Press Radio, and newspress.com. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening.
This has been Community Alert, produced by the Wildland Residents Association, San Marcos Pass Volunteer Fire Department, in association with the Santa Barbara County Fire Safe Council. Community Alert is proud to be part of the Orpala Fund Initiative, Aware and Prepare, a community partnership to strengthen emergency and disaster readiness. If you would like to help support the program, you may send your tax-deductible donations to the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. That's the Wildland Residents Association, 5655 West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. Comments regarding this Community Alert program may be sent online to community@wildlandresidents.org. That's community@wildlandresidents.org. Or you may call 964-7194. That's 964-7194. Production assistance for Community Alert is provided by Richard Dugan and Jim Williams. Community Alert, not if, but when disaster strikes.